Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to a post-Henry Kissinger episode of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Patrick Mifflin and Chris Sologi. Say hi to the good people, guys.
Yo.
Hello.
Yeah, we will be getting to that a little later because, there's just so much to go over about that man and his legacy and the just unbelievable amount of havoc he managed to wreck in his career on this planet. But
so basically the title of this episode is the Henry Kissinger Skull Keg Party.
Yeah, pretty much. But obviously that is not the only thing that happened this week. There's a bunch of other stuff that happened. Elon Musk did another Musk. We have some more political chicanery going on, including a certain now former House of Representatives member finally getting expelled from the institution, and he's basically going DEFCON 1 on everybody else. And will probably continue to do so over the next few days because he is going to spill some tea. We got some more news about that temporary truce that was declared between Israel and Hamas for exchanging hostages and prisoners. Sports Illustrated, which apparently still exists, has admitted to using AI to generate articles. We'll be talking a bit more about that. Apparently it's a bit more complicated, or it may be just them trying to cover their asses, but we'll see. Nice. And we also got some trailers to talk about. And Rob Reiner is going back to the drawing board and filming a sequel to, I believe, the first film he ever actually directed. And it's pretty much the one that will probably be his legacy, let's be honest. But before we do all of that, we will do, as we usually do, as is tradition, we will cap this off by talking about all the things we've been doing. This week leading up to this moment, and as is tradition, we will start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Dealing with a cold, nasty cold, for much of the week, so that's been fun. Basically just sitting here and then occasionally just be like, oh, my, there's going to be some stuff running out of my nose for a bit. And finding a Kleenex to stuff in there to stop that so I can exist and not just be wiping it down for 20-30 minutes, whatever. But I did manage to get out and went and saw Godzilla Minus One yesterday. Which is the first of the Japanese Godzillas we've gotten over here in a while. This is like a separate one from the general timeline stuff they've done, I guess. It's leans hard into like actual origin stuff of Godzilla, which if you don't know, if you've only seen like the Western versions, you may not know is that the origin of the character is based on the bombing of
Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Yeah.
Of Japan during World War II and the fallout of that.
That movie, when it originally came out, was meant to remind people of all the awful shit that happened because of that bombing. Like, you'll notice in the original movie, there's lots of images of, you know, people getting burn treatments at hospitals and all the medical places being overwhelmed with people. All the crumbling city structures and all that stuff is supposed to remind people of the bomb. And as you can expect, that movie was very controversial when it first came out in Japan, for very understandable reasons.
This one takes place in the waning days of, I think it's their bombing of Pearl Harbor, as the pilot that is sort of the main human character of this is landing at a mechanic island, somewhat nearby, I guess, as he has sort of deserted his kamikaze mission and is seeking to, you know, get away. And as he lands, you know, they're checking his plane and all that, and they're like, there's nothing wrong here, so what's going on? And then Godzilla attacks. I guess a younger form of Godzilla, but kills everybody but him and one other dude. And they fast forward a bit to him back on the mainland, sort of finding where his parents lived, and then finding out that the attacks on Japan and all that have killed his parents as well as a ton of people. They're basically living in like ramshackle housing kind of stuff. Runs into this woman who is sort of taking care of a kid that was given to her by a woman that was going to die. And so he kind of takes her in, and they kind of become a makeshift family of sorts, which I imagine was pretty common at that time, with all the people that died, both as the result of the bombings and all that, as well as, and you know, fighting in the actual war and all that that they did. And yeah, kind of centers on the trauma that he has as a result of the war, the Godzilla attack, his guilt he has over all this, and his cowardice and all that. And kind of makes for probably the most interested I've been in the human story stuff in any of these movies that I've seen. So that's a very successful thing where I actually gave a shit about what happened to them as they go through. And yeah, he ends up working on a government project that is trying to deal with the thousands and thousands of mines that have been left in the seas around Japan by the US and Japan. And they end up getting recruited into this plot to deal with Godzilla, who's been in the like couple years since that, since the war ended, basically decimating the various Japanese ships that have been in the, you know, in the path that he is going on, just destroying them constantly, that kind of stuff. And they managed to survive barely. And as they say, like, the U.S. is not going to help Japan in this because it's, you know, the start of the Cold War. They don't want to stoke all-out war with Russia at that point, or the Soviets. And so it kind of leads to this whole civilian-led of, like, former Navy, Japanese Navy people sort of coming up with some potential plans for dealing with Godzilla, because he destroys a bunch of ships, makes a couple landfall attacks, and destroys a lot of stuff very well, but they play him more as a monster as you would want in this kind of story, versus the way that he tends to get humanized in later movies and in the Western stuff. So that's kind of a really cool aspect of this, where he is very much a menacing monster that's, you know, nobody knows what his origins are, other than that he looks like a mutant dinosaur or something like that, as far as they know. But, you know, he has the big laser attack that he has, which they have a really good setup for that, where he's, you know, got his spikes on his back and tail, and those kind of jut out as it's charging up. So it's kind of really menacing visual to see that charging up as he's using it. And yeah, it's just it's a very good Godzilla. Maybe the I haven't seen very many of the Godzilla movies, so it's competing against a lot of the Western stuff, which I like more because they're stupid and ridiculous, whereas this is a much more serious and like impactful movie. So I definitely say it's probably the best of the ones I've seen, really. I think all the Japanese ones I've seen is maybe like Godzilla 2000. Not sure what else. But yeah, I definitely recommend checking that out. I did make the mistake of having drinking stuff before I went to the movie, so I had to pee the entire time. Basically, as soon as I saw credits, I just hightailed it out of the theater to the restroom. It's like, got to deal with this now. But yeah,
tactical error.
Yeah.
Mistakes were made.
Yeah. It was fine for the most part.
That's good.
Yeah. They have a twist at the end, which is the twist you expect. It's not a surprising thing.
Yeah.
So they can potentially do more movies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But that's the movie I saw. I'll probably see The Boy and the Heron next week when that's out. So that'll be fun. Other thing I've been watching more of as I signed up for Hulu's 1 year for 99¢ deal for Black Friday. And so I got back to watching Yu Hakusho, and I finished all the episodes they had, which was pretty annoying because I think the where it ends is after the first fight of the final round of the Dark Tournament. So I was like, really? You guys couldn't get the end of this arc? So I was pissed off about that. I'll probably have to pull out my DVD sets and finish that up. But that was pretty annoying for that. So yeah, there's that and just farting around with other stuff. Thing to have on when I don't have anything else better to do was King of the Hill. Just starting that again from the start, which is still a great show and all that. So there's that. And the game I've been putting most time in this week is Rocket League. The end of the season's coming up, so I'm trying to finish up what I need to do in that. And been playing that a bunch, so that's been pretty much it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, I was going to say move on to Pat.
Or Pat, yeah.
Yeah, Pat, what have you been doing this week?
For one thing, I've been figuring out that I made a critical mistake with my game hunting video because in the process of getting the whole thing done and trying to get the content up as quickly as possible, I neglected to include a final list of prices for everything that I bought in so doing. And so I'm, as I speak, I'm working on getting a video done to follow up on that and let everyone know what I bought entirely, how much I spent on it. And also my main source for import or for Super Famicom games, Japanese subcultures, got a restock this past week. And so I ended up buying another haul of games from there, and I'm going to be including that in my video as well, because there were some really amazing picks in that one, and I'm already planning my next purchase there. But I mean, anytime you get Gundam Wing Endless Duel for less than $30, that's a win. I got Sailor Moon S Jōgai Rantō for less than $10. So yeah, this is a really good place to go if you want to build your retro import library very quickly. And I really look forward to just showing people everything that I got and putting a lot more respect on this store than I already have, because this is going to be a staple for a lot of people, I believe, especially people who are just getting into retro import games and want to buy a bunch of Famicom, Super Famicom games for extremely reasonable prices, basically Japanese prices. So, that's pretty much what I've been up to, and just, getting everything organized. I've got some storage racks on the way from the UK, because I got to get the 13 centimeter ones for the narrower cartridges. And yeah, it's going to be really nice getting this all organized and having my retro gaming setup put together, hopefully, pretty soon here, but I've definitely got a great list of games to play already. So, and at that point, after that, I'm just looking forward to keeping it rolling over on the Little Akiba Games channel. I'm going to do a wrap up video for the PC Engine because I've been talking a lot about that system lately. And so I figure finishing up with a PC Engine installment of the What I Really Think Of series is the perfect way to do that. And then I'll probably move on to Super Famicom stuff and maybe into some emulation talk, because there's a lot to talk about there. But that's what I've been up to.
All right. Well, as for me, I have started playing a couple more games. I finished Alan Wake 2, and that game was amazing. And I had also finished some other stuff, so I thought it was time to go and, you know, take advantage of my Game Pass subscription. And they got some new stuff that were on there. And one of them was Rollerdrome. And Rollerdrome is essentially, I think the best way to describe it is, it's like Jet Set Radio, but with guns. It's essentially what it is. You guys ever see that movie, I forgot what it's called. It was like from the 70s. Oh yeah, Rollerball. It was like this old like dystopian sci-fi movie from the 70s where like the world is ruled by corporations and a bunch of people take part in this blood sport that's sort of like based around like a roller derby with like weapons and shit. That's basically what Rollerdrome is. It's you play this woman named Kara Hassan, who is a participant in this sport called Rollerdrome, where a participant has to, on a pair of roller skates, they go out onto a course where they are armed with, you start off only being armed with a pair of dual-wielding pistols, and then eventually you get like a shotgun and then a grenade launcher, and your job is to, you have to go out and you'll have like a bunch of what they call house players of various types. There's like, you know, melee guys that'll try and hit you with like a spiked bat. There's snipers. There's a guy, there's the warheads who are like dudes with like these huge rocket launchers. There's the security dudes who have like a riot shield and they use like landmines, stuff like that. And you have to try and kill all of these individuals while at the same time you have to dodge their attacks, and you have to also, because again, like I said, it's Jet Set Radio with guns. There's a bunch of like grinding and, you know, tricks and all types of stuff that you have to do, because that's how you actually reload your ammo. There are like no ammo packs or anything like that. No, you have to do flips and grinds and stuff like that in order to get your ammunition back. And like every one of the individuals you go up against, they've all got like, you know, like for example, the melee guys, they're the weakest. That only requires you to like have with your weakest weapon, which is the melee, with the dual wielding pistols, you only have to shoot them 4 times to kill them. If you get them with the shotgun, depending on, you know, how you time it, you can take them out in one hit. Snipers are a bit stronger than that. You have to hit them with 2 shotgun blasts for that. And then with the grenade launcher, you can take out a bunch of them at once, depending on where they're positioned at. But it takes longer to reload the ammo for that than it does for the other weapons. And like basically you're going through like, you know, the tests and then the quarters and the semifinals and finals and all that stuff. And while you're doing that, there's also this sort of side plot that's happening that you sort of experience in a, like a first person exploration mode, where you get a little bit more of the world building and sort of the controversy behind the Rollerdrome sport. There's like a plot line about the privatization of law enforcement, of big tech sort of creating like bigger pieces of like surveillance and security technology, the various like newspapers and journalistic enterprises being slowly having to change over their coverage to all Rollerdrome coverage because, you know, for various reasons, and all this stuff. And it's a fun game. It's a lot of fun. I legitimately like it. Only problem is it is also very difficult. It is not easy. And part of that has to do with the fact that, you know, like I said, you have to do these tricks in order to get your to get all of your ammunition back. But it also is because of just the sheer amount of stuff that comes at you at once. Fortunately, the game shows you when you're being targeted by like a sniper by having like a red stripe that's pointed directly at you. And, you know, you can dodge it anytime you need to, but you're also having to deal with the rockets that the warheads are firing at you, which are homing rockets, by the way, you know, heat seekers. And then of course there's the mines that have a pretty wide spread, and the security guys themselves have like a pretty big chunk of health that they can take off of you if they just manage to bash you with their shield. And then there's another dude that shows up that uses like a laser weapon, and you can only like hit him a couple of times before he can then like sort of pseudo teleport to another part of the map that you then have to try and find them again and then try them. And those guys can come out at you at like 3 or 4 at a time. So, yeah, it gets difficult. And on top of that, in order to like progress to like the various like tiers of the game, from like going to like the test to like the quarterfinals and all that stuff, there are these challenges. A lot of them are optional, but you do have to like do a certain number of them in order to make it to the next tier. And these include a lot of these you can do just regularly through gameplay, but there's also some that you actively have to seek out and do, like getting these various, you know, tokens or whatever. And some of them can be hidden in parts of the stage, stuff like that. And it was, it is fun. It's a great game, but it's definitely not easy. And it does take some getting used to. Having to, bring all of these different elements together can be very difficult to get a hang on at first. But other than that, I've also been playing Remnant 2. I played a first game, Remnant from the Ashes, which I really liked. It's much as how, Rollerdrome is, Jet Set Radio with guns. The Remnant games are Dark Souls with guns.
Okay.
Yeah. And it plays a lot like the first Remnant does. It has a lot of the difficulty and all that. And you would not think that, guns, Dark Souls, that would not be a good combination. No, it works really well. But much like with, the original, much like with Dark Souls itself, you have to sort of learn, when to, take the advantage and when to cut your losses. Because otherwise, you'll get your ass handed to you very quickly.
Yep.
But, so that's basically like the game that I've been, that's the games as far as I've been doing. As usual, I have been also reading constantly. Nothing major to talk about there. And really, just other than that, having to deal with the Christmas shit, because it's December now. Yeah, and
Yeah, Mariah Carey has been released from storage, and
yeah. Like not even an hour after thing ended, I started seeing that meme show up on Twitter. And yeah, it's like we gotta get the tree up and decorations and all this other shit. And yeah, over at work, they've already started, I will say this for where I work at. They don't do the 24-hour Christmas music thing, first of all, mostly because they're not open for 24 hours, but they do lay off the Christmas music, a little bit. So it's not constantly all that shit all damn day. Doesn't mean that they don't go hard on it, though, because holy shit. I have heard that Mariah Carey song at least 6 times this week.
Ugh.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's basically what I've been doing this week. Is there anything else you guys wanna talk about before we move on? Anything you wanna add?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. So yeah, with that, it's now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Stand Up Void. And so how are you guys on stand-up comedy? Are you a fan?
Yeah.
You're a fan of stand-up comedy? Okay.
I pretty much grew up on it.
Yeah. So when we talk about stand-up comics kind of come in categories, if you think about it. There's the one kind of comic who's like the general stand-up comic. And they're usually the ones that end up being the best remembered because they can do different types of material. They tend to be fairly deep. They're really good at all the various beats of stand-up comedy, storytelling, punchlines, being able to keep a gag going and then knowing when to stop it. And then you got, you know, you got these, from this, you get your guys, George Carlin's, Richard Pryor, Robin Williams to a certain extent, you know, guys like that. And those guys, you know, they're considered legends for a reason. Then you have your kind of gimmick comics. And these are the ones who basically came up with like one fairly good joke and have basically based their entire career around it. And you already are getting some ideas right now when I mention that. Mm-hmm. Jeff Foxworthy, for example.
Yeah.
He basically became a millionaire solely on that whole "you might be a" thing.
He's pretty on point with it, though.
Yeah, he is on point with it. The problem is that he takes that formula and then he recycles it for just a bunch of other shit for his material. Like, if you've ever watched one of his specials, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have guys who aren't, you know, there's also, like, and for the record, there's a lot of these dudes in, like, the southern blue-collar type comedy guys. Bill Engvall is also kind of like this. Though, to be fair, he only has the one joke. He doesn't try to recycle it. He has a bunch of other fairly solid material outside of it. If it's not your forte, that's perfectly understandable. But, you know, I'm from Georgia, so, yeah. And then, of course, there's Larry the Cable Guy, and I don't want to fucking talk about him. Then there's the prop comics. And prop comedy is a very much a two-edged sword, because there are prop comics who can do really good comedy both with and without the props. Gallagher, for all the hate that he got and the fact that he went completely batshit insane later on, he was a funny bastard. He could be very funny without the props. He could tell, like, some very solid jokes. And then, of course, you have Carrot Top. And Carrot Top has always been a mixed bag for just about everybody.
Yeah.
I've seen some stuff that is stuff that's just absolute garbage. And to be fair, he kind of is very self-aware about it. He doesn't let it get to him. Like, he knows that, you know, yeah, I'm Carrot Top. I got giant red hair and I shit out of a box. This is who I am. Also, these days, Carrot Top could very easily beat the ever-loving shit out of you and tear you in half. I mean, have you seen the guy? He started doing
MMA on the side or something?
He's just look at current pictures of him. The dude's built like a freight train.
Huh.
Did not
have that on my bingo card.
Yeah. And then there's the comics who are, frankly, just not all that good, but either because they were in the zeitgeist, they were just in the right moment, and they ended up having, maybe in spite of themselves, they had one piece of material that was good, and because of it, they become insanely successful. Like, just overwhelmingly, just incredibly successful. Two really good examples I can bring up. One is Dane Cook. You know, during the MySpace era, Dane Cook was a freaking power, like an institution. That dude sold out arenas, which is something that, you know, stand-up comics have not been able to do for years and years and years. And, you know, it's really, in hindsight, like, I'm not saying Dane Cook necessarily was bad. He wasn't really my cup of tea. He did have some funny moments, but yeah, it's very obvious, like, why he was kind of a flash in the pan. And then you had Carlos Mencia. Yeah, do you guys remember Carlos Mencia?
Yeah.
Or actually, his real name is Ned Holden, but let's not get into that. Basically, he was one of those dudes that became super successful, like, post 9/11. He would, like, really lean into, like, this sort of pseudo family value shtick combined with, you know, playing up his Latino-ness, even though, one thing, he would sort of play up, like, Mexican stereotypes, even though, one, he wasn't Mexican, and two, it got played out really quick. And then, you know, Joe Rogan basically ended his whole career when he revealed just how much of his material he had stolen from other comedians. Yeah, that's right. Joe Rogan used to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised people sometimes forget that. But there's another guy I want to talk about who is one of those examples of one of those flash-in-the-pan comedians who was a huge, I mean, legitimately massive thing. He was a huge hit in the late 80s, early 90s. And then he basically just fell off the face of the earth before he kind of sort of made a minor comeback in the late 2010s as like a supporting actor in a couple of films. His real name is Andrew Clay Silverstein, but basically the world knew him as Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Andrew Dice Clay is arguably one of the most successful comedians that is also one of the most controversial. And there's a couple of reasons for this. So Andrew Dice Clay, back when he was in his heyday, he had the shtick where he played, and he never really made this known that this is supposed to be a persona, like you're not supposed to take this seriously. He's very kind of hardcore in that way, with a type of persona. He called it the Dice Man. And basically what the Dice Man was is this very crude sort of New Jersey, a sort of Staten Island-ish type of stand-up comic. It's like all ditched out in like leather jacket and leather pants and t-shirt. He's usually got some gloves, some fingerless leather gloves on. And he just goes all in on this, like, it goes past insult comedy to just straight up
sleazy,
mean-spiritedness. He did things like, for example, he had this thing where he dirty nursery rhymes I kind of don't want to repeat them because some of them really are beyond the pale. But he did also have like some pretty funny ones as well. And then he would go really hard. First of all, the racism, but I mean, this was also the 80s and that type of shit was basically everywhere in stand-up comedy back then. But also just general misogyny, like really bad misogyny. And there's this one very famous incident that happened in 1990. First, he became the first comedian to sell out two consecutive nights at Madison Square Garden, which is a pretty big deal.
That is like, no mean feat.
No, that is no mean feat. I mean, there had been like comedians before him, like, you know, like Steve Martin, who had managed to like sell out these enormous freaking venues for, you know, a comedy special. But the fact that he managed to do that twice at Madison Square Garden is itself pretty astounding. He had about 38,000 people that he played to per show. But then he went on Saturday Night Live as the host of the episode. And this was, yeah, this okay, first of all, you need to know is it was the fourth highest rated episode of the season because, again, the dude was making bank at the time. But while he was there, if you ever try to find like footage of this, it's usually chopped up a bunch. And the reason is because during the opening monologue, there were a bunch of like protesters in the studio who had to like be removed from the audience by security guards. There was also a thing that one of the cast members, Nora Dunn, part of the cast at the time, she actually basically refused to appear in the episode with him in it because of just all the awful shit that happened in his stand-up act. You know, the sexism, the homophobia, the misogyny, all that shit. And on top of that, because of this, there's also the fact that they had like a 5-second tape delay that usually happens with these type of pieces. And, you know, a lot of Andrew Dice Clay's performances tend to be improvised. So much of the stuff that is on the footage that you see of him is mostly just stuff that happens there, you know, at the moment. And some of it is pretty raunchy. And even though, like, again, they had the 5-second tape delay, it's still managed, at least one of those remarks still managed to make its way on the air. And yeah, it's That was pretty much, I think that was like the beginning for him. After that went on, Sinead O'Connor was apparently scheduled to do another appearance, and she ended up like saying, going against it and protesting. Of course, O'Connor herself is very famous for doing what in hindsight was a very courageous and brave act, but got her no end of bullshit when it happened on SNL. But anyway, that whole thing is kind of, you could more or less consider to be sort of the beginning of the end for him. After that, he took up a starring role in a movie called The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, where he stars in it. And it was, it didn't necessarily bomb because it still made all its money back plus $1.25 million, but it didn't do very well. And he ended up getting like the Golden Raspberry first actor that year. He tried to run his own production company. That didn't do well. He had a special called Dice Rules that came out in 1991 that did okay. Because it was taken from the footage of he did when he was at Madison Square Garden. It did all right. But because of his act and just the general bullshit that went with it, he kept getting fewer and fewer venues that they were willing to like screen the movie. It only played to like 40 theaters when it first went up. And basically every place that this show showed up or he showed up, there were always protesters showing up. And again, it's not just because of the fact that he was a raunchy comedian. It was the fact that he was a raunchy, mean-spirited comedian that tended to, you know, by modern standards, he did a lot of punching down. And yeah, it's just a lot of his stuff just does not hold up well. But basically, yeah, he basically just, it didn't, but he still tours and he still does shows and he still does okay. But most of it, it's not anywhere near the kind of success that he had back in the day. And even today, when he shows up somewhere, he still gets a lot of controversy because, again, his material, I mean, it hasn't really aged well, and his new material just really isn't that good. That said, he has managed to get another career as a fairly successful like supporting actor. He was Lorenzo in the 2018 version of A Star Is Born, the one with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. And he ended up like getting a lot of positive reviews for his performance because he was actually really good in that movie. He's also been on some reality shows. He had a guest role on Vinyl, which was that show that Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger produced. They were, you know, so he's kind of, you know, he's gotten an okay career out of it, but it's like nowhere near the type of success he used to have. It was very fleeting. And let's be honest, for a lot of comedians, that type of like huge blow up success tends to be very short lived anyway. But you know, he's kind of managed to ride the wave, I guess. But yeah, his act is still not very, it's just not my thing. And I've never been the type of person to like, you know, judge a person's sense of humor, because humor has always been subjective. And I'll be the first to tell you that there's some pretty fucked up shit that I find pretty hilarious. But yeah, there's just even a guy like him is just a little too far. Oh, one more thing. He is also famous because he is one of the handful of voice sample done of them for a huge song at one point. He was sampled for the song Unbelievable by EMF back in 1991. If you're not knowing what it is, just look it up on YouTube. You've probably heard it more than once, but he's the one going, oh, over and over again in the song. And funny enough, his production company actually sued them over it back in the day for royalties because, you know, But yeah, so yeah, that's Andrew Dice Clay, kind of a fly in the pan, very divisive comedian. And honestly, he only could have become as popular as he did in the late 80s like he did because, you know, it was the era. But yeah, so and yeah, that has been yet another installment. So with that out of the way, it's now time to talk about to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And to start us off, we got here. So last week, both Israel and Hamas announced a temporary truce so that there could be an exchanging of both hostages from Hamas and prisoners from Israel back into each other's respective camps. The problem was is that there were a couple of areas where people ended up breaking the truce, but for what somehow more or less the truce managed to hold for a few days until finally it ended on Friday when Israel began resuming attacks.
Yeah.
Israel gonna Israel.
Mm. Yeah. And it seems like the Israelis were not necessarily following Gaza's, you know, demands for who to release. They're very much not doing that, not treating them well for the prisoners they had, that kind of stuff. But they did manage to extend that truce for a couple extra days. So that was at least a bright spot here. But yeah, has still been continuing to hit Gaza as much as possible. Hundreds of rockets they've fired into Gaza. So, you know, more fun stuff there. So yeah. I saw somebody describing this like the halftime show for a genocide, the truce. And it's like, yeah, I guess. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, so that happened. Oh, yeah, and then there's this. So you know how during 2020, back in the day, during last year, during the midterm elections, there was this bullshit about a couple of officials in Arizona trying to delay certification of it. Well, two of those Arizona GOP county officials are actually facing charges for it now.
Yeah. Let's see. Supervisors Tom Crosby and Peggy Jude, Judd for Arizona's Cochise County are facing, let's see, they're charged with felony offenses of conspiring to delay the counting of the county's votes and interfering with the ability of Arizona's top election official, the Secretary of State, to complete statewide counting, according to the indictment. So, yeah, that's good news. Show these people that they shouldn't be fucking around with this stuff. So, yeah, I'm not sure what sort of sentencing they could be up for with this stuff, but hopefully it's going to be a good bit, not a slap on the wrist. So we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And finally, Senator Tommy Tuberville, you know, remember him? He's the guy who's been trying to stonewall all of the military nominations for, he's been giving a bunch of reasons, but mostly it's because he's being paid to do it. He has signaled that he's backing down from his blockade of military nominations and will only block the quote-unquote woke nominees.
Yeah. So yeah, we should be able to get the majority of them. I don't know what woke nominees are going to be other than people of color and women, I assume. Anybody that may not be straight, but yeah, this is at least great news. So we got more than 300 top military nominees waiting to get confirmations. So hopefully they can start just getting those done so we can get people back to the job they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully that'll get through. But we also have our heroes of the week, although I'm not sure if you'd be called a hero for doing the bare minimum of what you're supposed to do at your job, but here's the leak. The House of Representatives finally voted to expel George Santos from the body.
Yeah. They had to get 2/3 of the votes and got 311 to, I think, 114. So got about 75% of the vote. So that's good. He'll be, I think, leaving the next couple of days. There's like just bureaucratic stuff to get done before he's officially out. But yeah, he should be gone pretty soon. He's very much been thrown a fit, basically saying he's going to get the hell out of Congress, you know, get the hell out of Washington, D.C. and all that. So, goodbye. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out.
But the funny part is that now he's gone, he's basically started going DEFCON 1 on just about every other fellow Republican in there. And he's already started on his Twitter account. And yeah, I have a feeling he's going to be spilling the tea on a bunch of people.
Yeah, I don't know. The top four House GOP leaders all voted to keep him. So that's a whole thing. But yeah, 206 Democrats voted to expel him. Two voted against. One from Virginia, one from Georgia. And two Democrats voted present. So, but 112 Republicans voted against expelling Santos. So, yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to see where that shit goes. But anyway, that has been the show proper. We now move on to proper show proper. And our first story of the night is that Henry Kissinger is finally fucking dead.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah.
But never faced any consequences.
No, he did not. In fact, he rather candidly became very successful because of it. He got a lot of nice teaching gigs and other shit. And yeah, he just, the amount of blood that that man had on his head, on his hands, is almost unbearable to just think about. Just, this man is responsible for expanding the Vietnam War, which was already pretty awful in and of its own, into both Cambodia and Laos. These very illegal bombing campaigns that were specifically kept secret until, you know, it, from the American people, until it was the press themselves that finally revealed it. You still can go to Laos and Cambodia and see like just the huge bombing craters that are still there. There are still children that will die because they stepped on a landmine that was put in Laos by a, by the United States military, even 50 years from now.
Yep.
Because of him. The Vietnam War very candidly kept going because this man sabotaged the peace process just so that Nixon could get reelected. He was the guy that put, you know, American support behind the Khmer Rouge regime after Vietnam on Cambodia, because the Khmer Rouge kept crossing over the border and slaughtering a bunch of Vietnamese villagers. And just, yeah, there's just, the man was a monster. And the fact that he never saw one iota of justice for what he did is nauseating.
Yeah. And devastation throughout South America and the Southeast Asia.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, Joe Biden doesn't like him. The statement that they put out for the while is very just terse. Like, yeah, he's dead.
Yep.
I'm sure his family will miss him. That's basically it. It was not like he would do for most normal people. So there's how much you know that even somebody like Joe Biden doesn't like him. Where he was beloved by most of the elites in Hollywood. Or in Washington, D.C. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And then, yeah, then there was a brand Twitter kind of trying to figure out what to do with this. And the New York Yankees put out a big statement, you know, eulogizing him. And it's like,
do your research, son.
Should have probably stayed out of that one.
Yeah.
Because
brands don't need to comment on this kind of stuff. Especially when you're the New York Yankees and everybody already hates you.
Yeah, but we did have a couple of other deaths that a bit more sad than that. First of all, Sandra Day O'Connor, she passed away this week. Former first woman on the Supreme Court. And was actually nominated by Ronald Reagan.
That worked out.
Yeah,
she was 93, retired back in 2006. Was on the court for about 24, 25 years, so had a pretty decent run. And that was an era when conservatives on the court weren't conspiracy nuts like they are now. Mm-hmm. So she was probably an all right person for the most part, but yeah, she helped spur a lot of women getting into law. Mm-hmm. So that was at least a good thing that came out of her nomination and all that. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also saw one of the Croft brothers, Marty Croft, passed away this week. Him and his brother Sid were famous for creating some of the most kitschy, campy, and yet wonderfully creative children's programming that ever existed from the 70s onward. Most yeah. famously, they did H.R. Puffin stuff. They did Land of the Lost. They did a bunch of other stuff, too.
Yeah. They made the weird Muppet stuff.
Yes, the odd Muppet stuff. The stuff that made you think there were definitely drugs involved.
Because yeah. there probably were.
yeah. They also did the Osmonds variety show, which is a mm-hmm. weird thing. That they did Donnie and Marie Osmond's show, which is just one thing doesn't that sticks out of amongst everything else they did. But that was pretty popular and probably got them in the door to do their mm-hmm. other stuff. So, yeah, that's a whole wild thing. But, yeah, died at 86. So, yeah, had a pretty good run there. So, there you go. Inspired mm-hmm. a whole era of Adult Swim stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
When they went live action, they definitely were influenced by the Croft stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's sad. But moving on from there. We now go on to the rest of the proper show proper. Our first major story for the night is Ted Cruz introduced a bill limiting enforcement of pronouns and chosen names, despite the fact that he uses a chosen name.
Yeah.
He is neither Ted nor Theodore.
Yeah. Raphael Edward Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, what is the point of this? Calling it the Safeguarding on a Speech Act. Proposes prohibiting federal funds from enforcing policies requiring federal employees to use preferred pronouns or names other than an individual's legal name.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like say this were to get passed, which it's probably not. Everybody on the Democrat side in the Senate should have to call him Raphael Edward Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you cannot forbid us from doing that. You're dead naming you. So, as always, it's something trying to get back at trans people. That kind of stuff. It's what he's more concerned about than anything else. So, as he says here, forcing anyone to use pronouns that don't accord with a person's biological sex is an unconstitutional violation of the First Amendment. As the Supreme Court held, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, is that no official, high, or petty can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion.
Yeah.
The government has no business compelling anyone to use pronouns that contradict biological reality.
Mm.
Which is some transphobic shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Hardly surprising from him.
Yeah. And next we got this other thing. So last week, Fox News had this debate between Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and California Governor Gavin Newsom, which... I've now recently just found out, apparently DeSantis had a teleprompter that he could use that was provided by Sean Hannity, the guy who's hosting the debate, that he could use, whereas Gavin Newsom did not have anything like that. He was completely going off whatever was happening. And DeSantis still got his ass whipped.
Yeah.
He got very visibly just wrecked and...
Like, imagine going to a debate with Fox News talking points loaded in the teleprompter.
Mm-hmm.
Who thought that was going to go well? Fox News. That tracks.
Yeah. He started off saying they had one thing in common. Neither of us will be the nominee for our party in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of went on, you know, doing various things. Kind of being a Biden surrogate there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, talked about like I'm the only one here that is a border state, is managing border states, you know, all that kind of stuff. It then brought up his attack on Bidenomics and talking about how he just the other day was celebrating, you know, money they got from the investment fund for fixing up roads and all that kind of stuff. Mm. Be like, oh, this man loves that funding, that, you know, Bidenomics. And kind of got him caught with a face that was like, oh, fuck. So, you know, and then at a certain point, Ron DeSantis brought out a map of poop.
Mm-hmm.
A poop map of San Francisco that is compiled from like 10 years worth of, or 9 years from 2011 to 2019, where human waste was reported in San Francisco, which is like, I guess, but, you know, his whole grand thing was like, hey, I got this map of poop.
Mm-hmm.
Weird flex, but okay.
And it's like, okay, that's some weird prop comedy thing. I don't know, but yeah. I say they got a couple like joke things here. Ron DeSantis is getting humiliated. Some synapse fired in his brain, and he decided the solution was to hold up a poop map.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, literally throwing shit because he has nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, some people are saying it's the same energy as when what's his face? Who's running for Senate in Georgia?
Oh God, that was Herschel Walker, wasn't it?
Yeah. Him holding up the little star thing, cop thing.
Mm-hmm.
Saying like, yo, I'm a cop too. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
That same kind of energy. So yeah. That wasn't really worth anybody's time, but people documented some weird stuff that happened there. So you can check that out.
Yeah. Yeah. And next up, Elon Musk did another Musk. As everybody knows, there's been like a parade of advertisers leaving Twitter. And he was recently doing like an interview at, I can't remember where it was, but basically they brought it up and he basically said advertisers can go for themselves.
And they will.
Yeah. And they will.
Yeah. Just kind of had the interviewer just stunned that he was doing this. Saying I don't want them to advertise. If someone's going to blackmail me with advertising or money, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. Is that clear? Hey, Bob, if you're in the audience, that's how I feel. And, you know, his CEO, Linda Yaccarino, was in the audience, so she was probably having a real good time at trying to...
Oh, she's loving her job right now.
Keep the ship, you know, floating and... dealing with advertisers, you know, losing money and this kind of stuff. And he's going around telling them to go fuck themselves. And it's like, yeah. He's trying to act like a tough guy. He wants attention. That's basically why he does anything here. Mm-hmm. And people on the left aren't wanting to give it to him. So that's why he's pandering to the Nazis and such on Twitter. So, yeah.
That's what he's got left.
Yeah. He's just... flushing the value of the company down the toilet. That's what he's successful at right now. So, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And let's see. Yeah, so that happened, and yeah, I have a feeling. I don't know if Twitter is going to be around by this time next year. So just because of that, I have a Blue Sky account, in case anybody's curious. But yeah, so moving on from there, a federal judge has blocked the TikTok ban that was supposed to go into effect in Montana before it could even go into effect for very obvious reasons. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, let's see, it was supposed to go into effect on January 1st. Now it's temporarily halted, saying that, you know, likely violates the First Amendment, oversteps state power, which makes sense because it's like, how are you going to even track this stuff? That people have, you know, it installed on their app and, or on their phone and all that. And it's like, how are you going to manage all this? And it's like, they wouldn't have anything in place right now other than just confiscating people's phones when they get pulled over or whatever. And it's like, that's not good. So yeah, it was a dumb thing. It was just basically marketing thing for the way people have been talking about TikTok, you know, when they did this. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah. And now another story of, hey, AI may have been a mistake. Sports Illustrated has admitted to using artificial intelligence to actually generate articles, but they blame them on a third party.
Jesus yeah. Christ.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah, just posting these dumb articles that are poorly written, you know, flawed information, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They said it ended its partnership with Advon Commerce, which sounds like a fake mm-hmm. company, but probably something real out there that supplied the posts. Yeah, just blamed it on them. Even used AI-generated photos for these authors. That kind of thing. So, yeah, one called Drew Ortiz
mm-hmm.
that had a bio saying, nowadays there's rarely a weekend that goes by where Drew isn't out camping, hiking, or just back on his parents' farm. Yeah. Or they didn't generate the AI photo. They got it off of an AI-generated image website. Description: neutral white young adult male with short brown hair and blue eyes. Mm. So, you know, great whole thing. It just shows kind of the contempt that the people that run Sports Illustrated right now, which is like one of those brand ownership companies that just has a bunch of brands.
Mm-hmm.
And they do their thing. Yeah. Everybody, Authentic Brands Group, you know, a very fun name there. And then they licensed that out to Maven, changed its name to Arena Group Holdings, which operates more than 265 brands, including Sports Illustrated, The Street Parade, Men's Journal, and Hub Pages. So that kind of shit that corporate-owned media will do here for the foreseeable future is they want to pay humans nothing to make content and just use stuff that will generate more SEO for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that matters to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But moving on from there to slightly less serious stuff. Once again, Merriam-Webster has come out with their word of the year for 2023. And in this year, the word is authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, selected as 2023 word of the year by Merriam-Webster Dictionary, landing among the most looked up words in their whole 500,000 entries. So. Yeah, driven by AI and all that stuff that's been going on. So, yeah, makes sense. So, yeah, there you go.
Mm. So, yeah. Also, in another story of, oh, shit, we're all going to die, the world's largest iceberg in the world has moved into open ocean.
Yeah. It's been around for a while. Was mostly hanging around the Antarctic Peninsula,
mm-hmm.
South of South America. But yeah, now it's starting to float away from there. A23A is on the move into open ocean. So it's trillion tons of ice. So it's hard to comprehend just how big a patch of ice this is.
Mm.
It measures 40 by 32 nautical miles.
Mm-hmm.
For comparison, Hawaii's island of Oahu is 44 miles long and 30 miles across. And New York City's Manhattan Island is about 13.4 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
Spans around 2.3 miles at its widest point. So it is a very large piece of ice there.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be where a Soviet research station was.
Yep.
But then it sort of broke off back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And took it to sea, so they had to leave.
Mm.
But then it became grounded on the seafloor, but research has been on the move again after shaking loose, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Nobody send the Titanic 2 down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And moving over from there, Warner Brothers Discovery, quote-unquote, mistakenly put the Looney Tunes shorts on list of shows and movies that were leaving Max soon.
Yeah. They've already taken like half of them off, but this seemed like them saying they were going to take the rest off, which made sense because if you looked at the list of stuff that was leaving at the end of December, it was going to be a lot of the other Looney Tunes stuff that's on there. Mm. So, you know, that makes sense that the shorts would also go, but they have claimed that that was a mistake and that nothing will happen to them after people, you know, clearly were complaining about that after this whole thing went out, so.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's still tons of other stuff they're taking down because they're going to write them off as tax stuff and, you know, let other streamers pay for that stuff if they want. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's going to be more fun time out of the Max streaming service there as you lose stuff from there. So there you go.
Yeah. And then we found out adaptation of Shogun will be premiering. Its first two episodes will premiere on February 27th. I read the original book that this is based on in high school. It's good shit, and I hope they manage to do this series justice. Because it's a damn good story.
Yeah. It'll be on FX and Hulu in the US, Disney Plus in other areas, so they'll have new episodes dropping each week after that. And mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like it should be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 10 episodes, so it'll be for about 9 weeks there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also found out this week that Reiner will be filming a sequel to This Is Spinal Tap early next year.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know how to feel about this. I would probably be more against this if it weren't the fact that Spinal Tap as like an entity basically has kept on going long after that film was released in theaters. Like they've even put out a couple more albums, they've done concerts and stuff. You know, they're as much a comedy troupe as they are a band. And they all sort of perform as their respective characters outside of it. So, you know, I'd be fine with a sequel. It's really hard to do lightning in a bottle like that twice. That first movie was exceptional simply because all the various elements managed to come together.
Yeah.
Also because of the sheer amount of comedy royalty that made their appearances in that movie while they were still unknown.
Yeah. Still could be pretty cool. It's like spoofing the aging rock stars that are still going on their, you know, their final tour.
Oh God, yeah.
Like, who is that doing it now? Kiss? Are they doing their
Kiss has done it
tonight, I believe.
Yeah, Kiss has done it. Elton John has crew has done it. A lot of those bands do it.
Yeah, and they're gonna have Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, Harry Shearer back.
Yeah, all three of the original dudes are back.
And they'll have Paul McCartney, Elton John, Garth Brooks in there. I don't, mm-hmm. You don't really need Garth Brooks. He's expendable, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's their new drummer.
I don't know. Make him what? Chris Gaines? Is that what the...
Yeah, make him Chris Gaines. That would actually be pretty funny, I think. That'd be like one, that'd be one hell of a B-side right there. Yeah, but I recently found out, apparently Chris Gaines thing came about because apparently there was supposed to be a movie that was being made, and that was like based around the Chris Gaines character, and he was supposed to be the star in it. So when the movie fell through, they still had to like go through this weird sort of ad campaign for a movie that no longer existed.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would actually be legitimately funny.
Yeah, they do say here it's going to mimic the style of Martin Scorsese's Last Waltz.
Oh, yeah. I've seen The Last Waltz.
Yeah.
That'll
documented
actually
the farewell tour of the Canadian-American rock group The Band.
Yep, The Band. Yeah, they were called that because they were originally Bob Dylan's backing band when he went electric.
Yeah. So, yeah. He's got to do this at some point if he wants to because he's not getting any younger.
Yep. Yeah. And then we got a couple of trailers. First and foremost, we got an official trailer for Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. So they're going back to Mad Max Fury Road and they're exploring the Furiosa character.
Yeah, it's a prequel of sorts, an origin story for Furiosa.
Mm-hmm.
with Anya Taylor-Joy as the as Furiosa, which is a seems like a pretty solid choice from what she's doing in here. And yeah, this is let's see. Yeah, as the world fell, young Furiosa is snatched from the green place of many mothers and falls into the hands of a great biker horde led by the warlord Dementis. Sweeping through the wasteland, they come across the Citadel presided over by the Immortan Joe. While the two tyrants war for dominance, Furiosa must survive many trials. She puts together the means to find her way home. Yeah, Chris Hemsworth stars as a bad guy, which is a pretty good thing to see these days. He's got a big beard and all that, so that'll be fun to see. So yeah, this looks pretty solid. It'll be out next year, May 22nd, I think. Or May 24th. Sorry. 22nd is international. So yeah, that could be pretty cool.
Yep. And finally, last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Prime Video Fallout. And I'll admit, it actually looks pretty good. And that being the key thing there, it looks good. But
yeah.
The question here is, are they going to maintain that kind of... Because Fallout famously is good for its like dark satirical edge. You know, it's able to like... when it does it well, it's able to ride that fine line between, you know, like funny and darkly satirical at the same time. I'm not sure how that'll be able to... They'll have to get a hell of a writer to be able to actually do that effectively for a TV show.
Yeah.
Especially if it's going to be canon. Because apparently this is supposed to be also be canon as well. So, yeah, they're going to have to... They got some serious shoes to fill if they're going to be able to pull that off.
Yeah. Let's see. They got the creators of the Westworld series on this, so... That could be pretty solid.
Or, you know, it could be like, oh, the first episode knocks it out of the appointment.
Yeah.
Much like Westworld.
They do say this is 200 years after the apocalypse, so I guess why it could be canon, because I don't know that any of the other ones go that far ahead.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But, I mean, yeah, they do basically get, like, all the basics. Like, I can definitely... Like, they adhere to all the aesthetics, and, like, I can see there's a ghoul, and I recognize them. Although, I will be honest, the ghoul is kind of tame-looking for... Well, now that I think about it, considering it's only 200 years after the apocalypse and not, you know, further out like a lot of the other games are, maybe this is just a ghoul that hasn't gotten that much... gotten all rotted up yet. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, they definitely get all the other stuff 100% on mark. So, you know, I hope that it'll be good. I'll say that. I hope it'll be good. And I hope, you know, I'm not expecting anything on par with like Fallout New Vegas, but maybe it'll still be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
It'll be out April 12th on Prime Video. Since it's on Prime Video, I'll never see it. So, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, we found out that Hazbin Hotel is going to happen. So, that's also going to happen.
Nice.
Yeah. And I've been looking forward to that for at least 5 years now. Yeah, that pilot that became like a massive success on YouTube. Yeah, that was 5 years ago, believe it or not. So I do believe... We got ourselves a show, folks.
Hell yeah.
We got ourselves a show, all wrapped, nested up, and packaged in a bow. So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, outside of Apple Podcasts, you can also catch bits of our unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator that you can possibly. So we're going to go ahead and wind it down. I just noticed that there's a brand new H Bomber Guy video and it's 3 hours long. So I'm
probably your night.
Yep. There goes my night. So that's what I'm going to be doing. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to, spread awareness of our work with your friends, your family, your coworkers, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everywhere in between. And of course, as we're getting into the holiday season, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, don't get too wound up in holiday stuff. It's way too easy to get really wrapped up in all of it, the whole holiday, and comes and goes. It just feels like such a massive letdown. You got 2024 to look forward to, and that's always a fresh start, which is exactly what I said in 2022, and look at where we are now. Yeah, I'm just going to leave on that. Bye, everybody.